Hey, everybody. Welcome to the On the Gold podcast. I'm your host, Kevin Hoagland, and joining me today is my co-host and producer, Mr. Kevin Bell. What is going on, Mr. Bell?
Hey, just coming back after a long hiatus and looking forward to helping miners become better miners.
Yeah, it has been a while. Oh, see, and it's been so long, I keep bumping into stuff. So, yeah, it has been some time. It has been some time. I apologize for that. I think we both do. But, you know, things just happen and you end up doing other things and taking care of really a lot of things that pay the bills. And yep. It just happens. So let's talk about prospecting and mining today. The business is over. Let's talk about helping people become better. What's our topic for the day?
I think the biggest topic that we've had feedback on, sum it up as recognizing opportunities when you're out prospecting and mining. And I think this is really targeting both new members or new miners and experienced alike.
Now, when you're talking about recognizing opportunities, you're not just necessarily talking, I mean, you're really not talking about equipment. You're talking about places to actually look.
Right.
And prospect.
And I think summed up is when you're out on the river or in the field and you're metal detecting, you're sluicing, you're looking around and looking for other opportunities where you're working.
Sure. It's called visual prospecting.
Yeah. Summed up as visual prospecting.
So let's, you said when you're on a stream, so let's talk about streams real quick.
Mm-hmm.
Look, is there gold that originates in a stream? Absolutely. Because you've got veins that come through that come through in those areas, and those veins are getting broken down by the movement of the water and so on like that. But 90% of the gold, or I'm going to say probably 99% of the gold that you find in a stream, that's the last resting place. It's come from somewhere else.
Right.
So if you're running into a stream and you're setting up your sluice box and you're working that particular material, yeah, you're going to get some of the gold, but now you have to really learn to look at your gold and see where it's coming from and then look at the other opportunities.
Mm-hmm.
And start doing the visual prospecting. And to me, I mean, there's so many facets of that. There's looking at the gold and then following the gold to be able to following the gold back upstream until you start finding coarse gold or coarser gold. Mm-hmm. And then start moving your way up and, you know, looking for that bench deposit and looking for the alluvial, the eluvial, ultimately the residual, and then the load. I mean, that's the ultimate goal that there is right now.
Right. Find the source.
Find the source. That's going for the source. But let's talk about the opportunities that you have when you're just looking at a river or a stream. Let's just say you're working in a creek. And you're, to me, it's a wash, wash, stream, creek, gully, whatever. How do you take advantage of those opportunities and not just look in one place? Yeah. Inside bend. Oh boy, all the gold's in the inside bend. No, it's not in the inside bend.
Mm-hmm.
That's a resting place. How did it get there? Where did it come from? And I think more importantly is thinking and thinking about how gold moves.
Mm-hmm.
And what it takes to move gold when you're in a stream. So that's going to be water. That's going to be water pressure. The faster that water moves, the higher the water, the different things that happen. You know, that's what creates a lot of opportunities. Is that the direction that you're thinking? Is that what we're talking about?
Yes. And I think people need to focus on gold moves in periods of high water.
Absolutely.
So what they're seeing when they're coming to the stream and it's in normal flow, people tend to work from there and think the gold is dropped there. A lot of the gold is dropped higher up during that high water mark. Mm-hmm. And so learning to look for those high water marks allows you an opportunity to work other areas where bigger gold or coarser gold may have been deposited, or smaller pockets of, or pockets of smaller gold.
Sure, absolutely. And there's, I think we've written more than, I know that I've written a lot of articles on the Where's the Gold and Ask Kevin on that same subject. You know, it's, and I think the one that really comes to mind for Wet is looking at the, actually it was one that you teed up to me on the Yuba River. Mm-hmm. I believe it was the Yuba, where beautiful sandbar. You could see the Diderus, you know, all the material that had flowed down. And when I say material, I'm talking about grass and tree limbs and sticks and so on like that, that where you've got your vegetation, here's your water, here's your vegetation up here, mm-hmm. and there's vegetation stuck to these trees.
Mm-hmm.
And you can tell because that grass, all of that stuff got hung up in those trees, and you're at the water level, and that's 5 feet below where that high water mark was, you know, 5 to 6 feet in some cases around there.
Right.
And
right.
Now you have to take that opportunity, because what you're looking at here, this may be an inside bend right here, but when that water was flowing at that high, that inside bend could be 60, 70, 80 yards up.
Right.
When you've got that type of flow. And it's not always the inside bend. I mean, it's, you know, gosh. I know the oldest saying is gold's in the inside bend because that's where the water's slowest. Well,
mm-hmm.
at time of high water, when gold is being moved, you need to start learning to look for where that water was the slowest.
Right.
Yeah. When the water's 5 feet higher than what it is right now, it still has a slow spot.
Right. But there may not even be an inside bend at high water.
Exactly. Exactly.
It might be flowing over the whole bar or the whole stream channel, and there isn't even an inside bend.
Right, exactly. And what you see is your inside bend right now, and you just said it. I'm going to reiterate it. That inside bend that you're looking at right here, 80 yards up when the water was 5 feet tall or 5 feet higher than what it is right now, or I'm sorry, yeah, 5 feet higher than what it is right now. Was there an inside bend right there? Or was that inside bend another 100 yards down where you have a massive, let's just say a massive bedrock outcropping
mm-hmm.
where material was moving down around that and creating that as an inside bend? Whereas when the water's in its lowest level, that bedrock outcropping is 4 feet above the water.
Right.
Yeah. So, yeah, it's all about visualization. To me, when you step into an area, and I don't care if it's a desert area or if it's a or a stream, the visualization, you've got to look at it, and you've got to use all the clues that are there, because there are hundreds of clues that are given you.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
and identifying those drop zones, the high watermark drop zones, are going to get you more gold. And it may be more difficult because you've got to carry buckets down to the water to actually process it. But overall, you're going to get better gold because you're actually working the drop zones.
Right, right. And that becomes, well, it's identifying those drop zones. Let's not talk about working those drop zones. Let's talk about identifying those drop zones.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, first off, if you're looking at low water right now and you're looking at a bar, you need to spend some time looking at that bar. You need to look and see how the surface material is laid out. Do you have a lot of fine gravels that are right there at the water edge, and then coarse gravels, and then fine gravels again, you know, those different types of things. So if you've got those coarse gravels, the really big stuff that's just, and I'm not talking about boulders, I'm talking about coarser gravel. Well, that stuff did not get moved as much.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you didn't have that much water pressure. So, or else that stuff would have been moved a lot further.
Right.
And if you've got fine gravel, coarse gravel, fine gravel, then you know that you've kind of got a slow spot that was in there somewhere. Now follow that and figure out where that really dropped out.
Mm-hmm. Right. As you're prospecting, I know follow that trend.
Yeah. Follow that trend. And I know some of that doesn't make a lot of sense because when you're looking at a gravel bar, you may not be able to tell the difference between maybe a fine layer and a coarse layer and another fine layer and maybe another coarse layer and so on like that. But, you know, if you think about it, if you have a 5 gallon bucket and you've got a trough and you've got a whole bunch of material, let's say you've got really fine gravels in there and you've got bigger rock on it, let's just say half inch stuff all the way up to half. And you dump that water in there in one shot, it's going to move everything.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to move everything. But if you take that bucket and you go side to side with it as you're dumping that material out, or if you move that bucket and you've got really heavy water at one spot, then a little bit slower water, maybe you lift the bucket up a little bit and then you put it back down, the larger stuff gets washed away, gets pushed away very easily. The finer gravels are still there because they just didn't have that much movement in that particular place. Plus, they compact a lot better. They compact a lot. They will start to compact.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that's the easiest way to look at it as far as I'm concerned. I mean, I'd love to hear what your opinion is on that. I mean, that's the way I look at it is just think about the water flow. Think about what's happening.
Right. Yeah. Your two keys. Look how the water moved. And that will help you identify those drop zones. So those two key points, mm-hmm. identify the drop zones, but use the obvious movement of water to do that. I think that's perfect. Right. I don't think I could add anything to that.
Yeah. And that doesn't mean that, you know, fine gravels aren't being moved around and so on like that. What I love finding is circulation zones of like fine gravels. And then where you've got, and where you can obviously see where there was material that was starting to circle, that was just starting to maybe cyclone out a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And then a pile of heavier gravels off to one side. So, you know, you had the circulation area. And because you had a whole lot of fast moving water, that's what created that circulation, but the larger material got kicked off to one side.
Right.
So that tells me that was a little bit slower area. And to me, the most important part of this is that that's great if you see it on a sandbar, but if you've got detritus, if you've got stuff, grass and leaves and things like that, 5 foot out of the water channel where it is right now, you need to go look for those things in those places.
Sure. And debris piles are real easy to spot. That disturbed vegetation you're talking about is a little tougher.
Oh, yeah.
But it's just as important. In fact, that disturbed vegetation is probably going to have a bigger dispersion of gold of all types, more coarse gold, more fine gold, because it starts to, as it's rotating, it's starting to spread those layers out. The finer material will go out to an edge and the bigger material stays to one side.
Yep.
So identifying that disturbed vegetation is a big benefit.
It is. It's a big benefit. And I think it's beyond a benefit. It's a necessity.
Mm-hmm.
It's one of those necessitated tools that you've got to be able to recognize and learn. You need to be able to learn and recognize those. And I loved it. You sent me a picture a while back of an area where the grass had been disturbed, like 3 or 4 feet out of the current water channel.
Mm-hmm.
It was on kind of a bench, but I'm not really going to call it a bench. I mean, it wasn't a flat bench. It was something like this. But you could see where that circulation zone was because the grass had actually laid down in a particular direction.
Right. Right, almost in a circular pattern.
Yeah, and you worked on the I was going to try to get nautical with it, but you worked on the area where the more of the debris had fallen,
mm-hmm.
and where you had the larger debris and so on like that, and the larger rock and everything else that circulated around that. And if I remember right, you got into some really good gold and had some nice big stuff. And
right.
more importantly, is you had a grammar day when you were just really not out there for very long.
Right. Yeah. Prospecting turned into mining almost immediately. You just, right. you immediately go full scale.
Yeah. Yeah. So let's talk about the things you look for. You're going to look for anywhere that the water slowed down, and that doesn't mean the inside bend. That means you need to look where the water, You need to look at where the water has been, not where it is
mm-hmm.
now. And then you have to look at the movement of that water and how that water moved coming through that particular area.
Right.
And you don't have to be able to see you have to be able to look at the ground, but you don't have to be able to see the inside bend the way it is now. You have to be able to visualize the slow areas
right.
of where it was during that period of time. And anything can change that. A huge tree 5 feet up from the water flow or from the water channel
mm-hmm.
that the material's hitting it, the water's coming through there, and you've got this amazing force of energy coming in contacting with this tree and creating another channel on the back side of that. You need to take those things into consideration.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And I'm going to honestly say, running to the inside bend of a river or a stream or even a dry wash is not the best thing to do. And we've always talked about, and I don't even know where that came from, you know, gold is at the slowest point on the inside bend of a stream. I think that's the easiest thing that people say to help people get started finding gold. Because if I do go to the inside bend of a stream, am I going to find gold? Absolutely. Am
sure.
I going to find the possibility of the largest gold in that area? Absolutely not.
No, no. And that's, people need to understand, identifying the drop zone doesn't necessarily mean the classic things, the inside bend behind that rock. It's always at the high point. Identifying those drop zones at the high point may have deflected material down into the stream. It may have stayed up high. You don't Yep. know, but you've got to identify how that material moved, the debris piles, the disturbed vegetation, things like that will show you where that gold channeled into.
Mm-hmm. Right. And we could literally sit here and I think probably talk for hours about different places that you and I have both worked
mm-hmm.
where it had nothing to do with the inside bend. It had to do with where the water used to be during those flood events, during those high water events. And, you know, you're a wet guy. You're up there. You've got water year round in some of the places that you go to.
Mm-hmm.
Let's talk about that for dry. I mean, we've talked about finding the detritus up on the side and looking at the inside bend and seeing where the water's flowing. Let's talk about dry. Let's talk about desert prospecting.
Sure.
And it doesn't matter if you're out there with a metal detector or a dry washer or even a dry pan or an old Navajo blanket where you're just out there with your buddy winnowing, which is still to me one of the greatest. It's so fun to go winnowing with a buddy because, I tell you what, you talk about getting in sync with each other, being able to pop that blanket and make all of that work perfectly and at the end of the day, just to have that gold that's in there. That's a great feeling. And it's, but boy, you talk about a good lesson in teamwork.
Yeah.
And I think everybody that has a prospecting buddy should go winnowing. I don't care if you have to, in your area, I don't care if you have to go to Home Depot and buy a bag of sand and throw some black sand into it and then stand out on the driveway and practice with it.
Right.
You know, that's a team building exercise right there. Just getting into sync.
Sure.
But that's really not what we're talking about. So if you're looking at a dry area, everything that we just talked about holds true. Mm-hmm. If you're looking at the cactus, if you're looking at anything, look and see where that water event was and what the highest point of that was. Now, in a dry wash, an absolute dry wash right now, when you're looking at those high water events, if there's trees in the area, absolutely, you're going to find that debris that's been stuck into the tree. You're going to find the leaves that came from other trees and different things like that. But even higher than that, or even, and sometimes lower, the beaver tail cactus. I mean, I've seen beaver tails that were just out of the stream by 3 or 4 feet, walked up to them and saw detritus, just this debris packed into the cactus.
Sure.
And that becomes that's where I know that high water point is. And I'm going to find that. I'm going to follow that down,
mm-hmm.
and then let everything else tell me where it slowed down. And if I'm working a dry area and I'm walking through there, and let's just say, because there aren't a lot of trees and I'm looking at cactus or whatever, you will see where that material dropped out. You will see where that material got stranded. And sometimes it's a matter of seeing like vegetation that's on the side of the hill that as the stream went down, it moved its way down in a line.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it, because it was moving so slow at that particular area, it had almost stalled out here, or maybe it had stalled out for some reason and it just got packed in. And then as that water level, because Arizona is all about flash floods, you know, it could be 6 foot high right now, 5 minutes from now, 3 foot high, 5 minutes after that, 1.5 feet high. And then, you know, 2 days later, it's going to be damp, dry ground or damp ground.
Right.
It just happens that fast. So,
well, and rain patterns in here in California, again, there may be single events. High water is a single event, but there's also high water as multiple events. So you might have rainstorms 2 days apart here, and they get surges of water through the area, and it moves the gold from one drop zone to the next.
Absolutely.
And I think you're saying exactly the same thing in the desert.
Yeah.
You know, those flash floods may move multiple times, or move the gold, right, multiple times.
It'll move the gold multiple times, but more importantly, because it is such a ferocious event, a lot of times, if that water level, let's just say that water level in a gulch comes up to the average water level during a flash flood, it comes up 3 foot. Okay? Mm-hmm. We'll just say that that's an average area. If you're only looking at what might be the inside of the bend and you're not really looking at other things, what you're absolutely missing are high concentrations of gold.
Mm-hmm.
High concentrations. If 3 foot up on a gulch, when that gulch is flowing like crazy, and there's an area where that material slowed out, maybe it's a little drift into the bedrock or something.
Mm-hmm.
The next flash flood moves out some of that material, but it also concentrates more material into there.
Sure.
So, you know, I may have 100 grams of gold sitting in there, and the next flash flood moves out 15, but puts in 20.
Right.
And the next event moves out 15 and puts in 20. Yeah. I'd love to find 100 gram gold pocket, something like,
sure,
that, or something that's been growing all those years. And they are out there. I mean, I'm not going to say that I haven't found them. I found a couple of great pockets of just hammered out gold.
Mm-hmm.
Hammered out gold, and we're not talking about grams, we're talking about ounces.
Yeah.
And it was, they were not in the stream channel, they weren't in the inside bend. These were where areas that had been just concentrated and concentrated and concentrated by a high water event.
Mm-hmm.
So,
mm-hmm.
I don't know. I think have we beat
well, and I think, death? Yeah, I think we've definitely covered that. One thing that we've talked about before, and I know this happens in the desert a lot, but I've actually in one of the Where's the Gold, there was these type of deposits here local to me. And we're talking, I think one of the opportunities that you can recognize is those large scale deposits where two soil types have a buffer zone where they come together, or there's a tree specific to a type of soil where gold's found.
Sure.
And I think that is also a great opportunity.
Right. But you need to be able to learn how to look at those opportunities and those.
Sure.
Blonde to red does not necessarily mean that you've gotten into a good mineralized zone. It just may mean that there's a lot of oxidation,
right,
and you've got red soil because of that. But now you need to learn to look at the other factors. You need to look at the other things. Mm-hmm. Now, you know, there's always the joke about the trumpet plant, because you will find people that the first indicator that they use is trumpet plants.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a great idea. I mean, it's a great thing, because that is something that only grows in high iron content soil.
Right.
Now, it's just like black sand. Mm-hmm. Wherever there's gold, there's black sand. For the most part. I mean, there are some areas where it's devoid. We know that. But the rule of thumb is very simple. Wherever there's gold, there's going to be black sand. Well, wherever there's trumpet plants, there's probably going to be black sand. Well, there will be some sort of iron soil, but that doesn't necessarily mean that there's gold.
Right.
But it is a great tool. It is a great indicator. Now, once you see that, now you start looking for the other indicators.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're standing out there and you're just glassing, and I'm looking across an area, and I've done this more than once, I see a group of trumpet plant growing in an area. I'm heading to that spot because I want to check it out. I absolutely want to check that out, because now I'm going to look for the other materials. I'm going to look for, especially here in the Southwest, I'm really going to start looking for that greenstone. I'm going to look for that schisty material, the Yavapai schist,
mm-hmm,
which is a mudstone that looks, you know, you've just got this OD green color to it that's just flat. It's not shiny. It's not a smooth rock. It's kind of coarse. It's a mudstone, and most of the time it's got mica or some pyrite inserted into it.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one thing I'm going to look for. I'm going to look for some of the other mineralization. I'm going to look for things like, of course, I'm going to look for quartz.
Sure.
And I'm going to look for the quartz where I've got the vug, meaning the pitting that's there. Iron stain, whether it be red or whether it be black, I don't really care.
Right.
It's iron staining, and that's just a matter of oxidation and so on like that for the most part. And then I'm going to look for the contour. I'm going to start looking at the ground itself.
Mm-hmm.
So I see these indicators. Now let's start looking at the ground, and let's look at what the ground is actually telling us and where that material could be. And I guess I don't want to pick on Rick, but, you know, and I think we've talked about this on the podcast before. I took you guys into a particular area where you had a little bit of blonde or whitish blondish soil, huge amounts of red soil, mm-hmm, and iron pigmented, and you run your magnet across the surface and it comes up and it looked like a chia pet,
mm-hmm,
huge amounts of iron that was on there. And Rick, being at that point fairly new as far as like looking at desert, and I don't mean new prospector, I left it to you guys to figure out where you wanted to start. And of course, boom, straight up the hill into an area that looked kind of good, but missed every piece of dirt in between here and there because he was working with a different set of eyes.
Right.
And that's not knocking Rick, because Rick's a damn good prospector.
Oh yeah.
Rick is a great prospector. I'm not going to belittle him in any way, shape or form, but when you walk into a new environment and you don't know what you're looking at,
yeah,
you're going to go back to what you know.
Right.
I mean, it's, we talk about this in weapons training. We talk about everything else. What's the first thing you do? You revert back to your training.
Sure.
And when you're in new, and when you're in a completely new environment, you can do that. But that's not what this podcast is about. This podcast is getting you out of what you're used to doing and now looking for some new things. So when you change your environment, you have to change your vision.
Sure. And again, going back to recognizing those opportunities, you got to take a moment to look at the whole picture and recognize those opportunities that, you know, instead of just being head down prospecting or mining, you're looking around to identify those things that you can go check.
Right.
Doesn't mean there's gold there. It just means there are opportunities for gold.
Right. And to Rick's credit, Rick went up, started to come back down, realized, I think he really realized that he'd gotten way out of what he should be looking for and basically found his very first piece of gold with a metal detector. Within 20 feet of where we started.
Right, right.
And that area is still producing a lot of gold, and I've used that as a training area more than once, and I did the same thing. So I wasn't picking on Rick. I wasn't picking on you.
No. Nope.
Because you were new to desert anyway. You were new to desert as well.
Yeah.
But I've had people go 200 feet higher up the hill than Rick did. You know, I was like, babe, go to where you think, go to what you feel, but keep your eyes open,
right?
Keep your eyes open and looking and look at other things. And I, you know, help them kind of like what I was just talking about, trumpet plant, this, that, you know, all that other type of mineralization. But when you revert back to your training, you put the blinders on and you just go.
Sure.
This is about taking the blinders off, looking every opportunity that there
sure.
is.
And that's independent of the method of mining, metal detecting, dry washing, running water. Take the blinders off. And I think people, as you recognize these opportunities, understand that it may be a little tougher work. You might have to carry a bucket farther, or you might have to move the dry washer or go up the hill to, you know, with your metal detector and work a side hill.
Sure.
But the benefit is you're probably, if you find a spot, you're going to find really good gold and it's going to be worth it. So big key, I know it's tougher. It's always easier to work in the box, but recognizing that opportunity allows you to get potentially better gold.
It absolutely does.
And I got to tell you,
I couldn't say it. I could not say that any better. I really don't even have anything to add to that. So,
and I have to tell you, by recognizing some opportunities, I have saved many a bad gold day. And we talked about the thank you for not prospecting, where we were having kind of an okay day, not really a great day. And found an area where somebody had thrown material on, dug a hole and threw the waste material on top of a spot that had the best gold in the bar. And very quickly went from a okay, mediocre day to a great day.
Right.
In the space of a bucket and a half or two buckets.
Sure.
So
and
that opportunity saved it.
Yeah, and we do talk about trending and looking at really when you recognize opportunities, that's great. But if you don't know how to test and sample that material, then it's really not doing you a lot of good. So we've got other podcasts that we've talked about, compartmentalizing, dollars per yard, different things like that, where we talk about trending. We talk about how to get into that the highest pay layers. Listen, watch those podcasts. There's a lot of great information there, but you've got to be able to get to that spot by taking other opportunities.
Right.
So I guess we could have just said, hey, get out of the box, take the blinders off and learn to look around at everything that you see.
Mm-hmm.
Not what you see, but where it, what you would have seen had you been there during these particular events or different things like that.
Right. Yeah. And the interesting part of that is once you start recognizing those opportunities and actually test them and you're successful, mm-hmm. identifying multiple similar areas in the same stream or the same wash, may find other areas that have exactly the same characteristics. Will they have the same goal? Not always, but it's a good segue to find big gold and have a big area of big gold.
I want to go with that for just a moment, because there's something that I've seen over and over and over for all of my years out there prospecting. Mm-hmm. Somebody will go out, they'll do some testing here, they'll do some testing, a little sampling, boom, boom, boom. They get into a spot. That spot could be a part of what we're talking about, just having a different opportunity, not working the inside bin. And they go in, they work that area, they get some really great gold out of that area, mm-hmm. and then they move on to somewhere else. If that spot where you found that really good gold was found by expanding your vision, by expanding your view, taking the blinders off, then why would you not replicate that in the same area? In the same wash. If I've got a wash that's 1,000 yards long and it curves, it does this and it does that, and it's got nice slopey sides and bench materials and things like that, and I go up here and I went up to sit somewhere and have my lunch, and I got into a spot that had some good gold, and I worked that spot, and because I've tested and sampled at different layers, why do people not take that opportunity of that spot that they worked and try to replicate that moving up? Sometimes
mm-hmm.
the difference between a little bit of gold and a lot of gold is a foot higher.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
In an area. And maybe you accidentally went up a foot higher. Maybe you were just, you know, who knows? But if you find something higher there or even lower there, why not replicate that?
Sure.
Why not replicate that and re-prospect the areas that you've been prospecting?
Mm-hmm.
That's a big thing for metal detectors, especially if you get into an area, if you're working tributaries or side tribs coming into a major wash. I'm not going to waste my time with 5 feet of overburden with a metal detector. I want to find out where that bigger stuff came from, how it got there, so on and so like that. But if I find an area where 20 feet up out of the wash, I start finding some decent gold, the first place I'm going to stay is I'm going to try to stay at that elevation and go to the next one, see if it has any similarity of the last trip where I found that gold, and I'm going to work some of that.
Sure.
And then I'll go up or I'll go down. Depends on what it looks like. But if I've got a trip that comes down, flattens out because there's a bedrock shelf, and I find some gold there, and then I move 20 feet over to the next trip, I'm going to be doing the same thing. I'm going to replicate what was successful going different places. Now, mm-hmm. is that always going to be successful? No, it's absolutely not. It depends on where the gold came from.
Sure.
You know, if the gold was in a chute and came down like that, then that's the only place I'm going to find it.
Mm-hmm.
But at least I'm going to look.
Sure.
At least I'm going to look.
Well, and it's always good to try to make the box bigger. If you find an area where you're finding gold, moving up slightly or down slightly, try to make the box bigger, because mm-hmm. you're going to probably find gold. If you found gold at the 5 foot level, you're probably going to find some gold at the 6 foot level, or the 4 foot level. So making the box bigger is always good.
Right.
At least worth a try.
It's not worth a try. It has to be done.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we can sit here and we can talk about, you know, at least give it a try. No, if you're going to prospect and you're going to do this for success, it's not a matter of just saying, this is it. This is that. I'm going to stick with this. You've got to know, if I find gold here, right in this spot, I'm going to be looking for where that gold came from. It goes all the way back to the 1800s, and the old prospectors in the creek looking at the gold, panning and sluicing and looking at the gold, but more importantly, getting the information from the gold, letting the gold talk to them.
Mm-hmm.
And they get coarser and coarser and coarser, so they're getting closer to the source. Then they start getting a lot of mixed fine gold along with their coarser material, so on like that. Well, then they know that, okay, this is where I got to go. I got to go up this. I've got to go from here. Mm-hmm. And they find the bench, and they get in some really good gold, because in a lot of cases, the bench deposit where the water used to be, and I'm not talking about 1,000 years ago. I'm talking about a million years ago.
Mm-hmm.
You know, those bench deposits, when the Yuba River was 3/4 mile wide, those bench deposits held a lot of gold, because, you know, if we look at it, there's a lot of people who tell you that not only did the Yuba change direction, mm-hmm. but it changed depth virtually overnight.
Mm-hmm.
It was one tectonic event that changed everything. It was just one plate event that moved this river or that river or whatever. And I shouldn't just say the Yuba, but moved everything.
Sure.
So, and I've always talked about this, and we've always talked about that. Don't look at where everything is now. Look at where everything used to be.
Sure.
You know, learn to look at those things. And I don't know, I think I've covered it in the past, but look for the obvious things. Really look for the obvious things. And then also look for the things that you just, that you don't see that easily.
Mm-hmm.
But that's kind of off. Well, no, that is about taking opportunities, but I think it's a little bit too far off of this one.
Sure.
Maybe we'll address that in recognizing bigger opportunities. I think,
sure.
I think that'll lead us to another podcast, but
oh yes,
for the simplicity of this, for somebody that's new, or somebody that's been doing it for a while, we all fall into the trap. I'm not going to say I haven't fallen into that trap as well, because I have.
Mm-hmm.
I have fallen into those traps. So let's make the best out of it.
Sure.
And there are times where I just don't do what I'm sitting here telling everybody to do. Maybe I get tired. Maybe I'm just in the wrong headspace, and I go in, I hit a few areas. Yeah, whatever. I'll take a few specs that solves that, you know, that takes care of the itch and move
right.
on.
Scratch the itch.
So, yeah. Scratch the itch, and that's about it.
Right.
All right. Anything else on this topic?
No, I think we've covered everything, and I think we've got some real good takeaways.
Okay.
That we probably need to, you know, to talk about or to reiterate before we go.
Okay.
And I think, you know, your big point, identify the drop zones. So, you know, whether it's a debris pile or it's disturbed vegetation or just the fact that you're seeing something as subtle as changes in how the gravel's laying,
mm-hmm.
identify those drop zones.
That's to me, that's the number one takeaway.
Right. Right. And the big thing, enlarge the box. If you can, and you find an area where you've hit a good amount of gold, try to expand the box either right in the area where you're working or to find similar areas in the same wash or in the same stream to try to see if you can replicate that discovery. Because mm-hmm. in a lot of cases, if gold is coming in from certain areas, or several areas, you will be able to replicate. Unfortunately, sure, if it's only coming in from one area, probably not going to be successful, but it's a good practice to, you know, check those areas to make sure.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, there's an old saying, and I think this falls right into here, about repetition wins.
Mm-hmm.
The more I repeat the same thing, the more I do the same thing, the better I become at it.
Right.
Now, I agree with that. I agree with repetition wins wholeheartedly.
Mm-hmm.
But the practice of repetition is what wins.
Right.
You still have to be able to look and see what you can replicate.
Sure.
If that makes any sense.
Sure.
You know, I know that I'm going to work this way, and I know what I'm looking for, but I still have to expand my vision to where I have that opportunity to find that area, to find that type of material and different things, you know, different things like that.
Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, one of the big things we talked about too, gold moves at the high water mark. You know, you're down here working a stream during the normal flows, and you have that inside bend, for instance, or that bedrock that's exposed.
Right.
Well, remember, when you're at the high water mark way up here, those things aren't there. And right. You actually, it's just one, like you said, enormous event or even multiple events that put that gold in those areas. So don't think about where the water is now. Think about where it was, because that's right. When the gold's moving.
Right. And there's two types of, when Kevin and I talk about where the water is or where the water was, we're not just talking about the I almost confused myself on, or I almost said the wrong thing on that one. There's those fast events that have happened, like modern day flooding, those high water events, those things that just have massive amounts of water. Mm-hmm. So that's one of those things about where the water has been or where the force of nature has been. Mm-hmm. But there's also that other one of where the water used to be a million years ago or 10 million years ago. Two completely different things. And
yes.
Learn to look at both of them mm-hmm. when you're out there. So, okay, go on. Keep going.
No, I just think those three things that we just talked about, key takeaways from recognizing opportunities. Because when you do that and you become successful and you start using that as your standard prospecting and mining technique or your
repetition,
right, you will be more successful overall. When you look at over the year, you may have points where you found a good bit of gold, you tried to expand the box, or you tried to look for other areas, and it just didn't, there was just no other gold. But right. overall, if you keep doing that throughout the year, and every time you go out, you start recognizing those opportunities, you will get more gold by the end of the year.
Absolutely. You will. And that's not speculation. That is an absolute, honest, just hard truth.
Yep.
The better you open your eyes, the better that you expand your vision, the more that you take and use these other opportunities, these prospecting opportunities, and have that expanded vision, you are going to become more successful. That's all there is to it. I think that's it. Anything else?
I think we're good.
Well, then we're going to put this one into the can. All right, everybody. Thank you for joining us on this episode of On the Gold. We hope that you learned something as usual. It's, you know, we do go different directions. We understand that. We are both ball squirrel at times. Get it, understand it. But the most important thing is that you have your takeaways and you've got them. Now go out there and use those. Use those things we talked about today, and we will guarantee you that your gold production, your gold recovery will go up.
Mm-hmm.
Be good to yourself, be good to others, and get out and go prospecting.